and welcome to another exciting episode of Extra Features Podcast. Today in the house, again, we have Alan C. Gardner, film Bad, Bad Men. But we're going to discuss other things today because he's here a lot and we'll get to his film, I promise. But he was just telling me in our pre-chat that I really want to discuss is auditioning. Alan, you have like 4 or 5 films, maybe 6. Why do you still have an audition? People should know who you are.
Well, that's very kind of you, but no, I absolutely never take it for granted that anyone knows who I am. And I like auditioning. I as much as I love making my own films with my friends, which I'll always do. I mean, at the end of the day, that's, you know, the most meaningful thing to me artistically is making films with my friends. But I love helping other storytellers like bring their films to life by acting in their movies. So yeah, I like to get out there and audition and keep testing myself and pushing myself. And I think I always will, too.
Who are you auditioning for, though? I mean, you should be well-known in the indie circuit, at least.
I don't know. I don't think... I don't know to what degree I'm known or not known. I mean, maybe in certain circles, but... No, there's a ton of people, definitely, who have no idea who I am.
Well, how is that?
And that's fair enough.
Well, here's a good question. You've been in the industry for 20 years, right? 15, 20 years?
Yeah, uh-huh.
And people have no idea who you are? How does that feel?
I don't know. Well, I guess, okay, the way I look at it is I'm always pleasantly surprised when someone does know who I am. But that's kind of my outlook. And, like, I never want to be the person who's like, I can't believe there are people who don't know who I am. I'm much more like, oh, someone, like, it's all... It's really exciting to me when either someone knows who I am, or especially when someone says, you know, that they really responded to one of my films and like that it resonated with them. Like, that never gets old to me. So that's just kind of my outlook on the whole thing. Like, I never want to be shocked that there are people who don't know who I am. I'm just pleasantly surprised when people do know who I am.
So yeah. Let's start. Bad, Bad Men. Where does this title come from? Because these guys aren't bad in any way.
The title comes from the land. End of irony, my friend. No, it comes from, all right, so for the longest time, since I was a kid, like, I kind of had a problem with machismo, or at least with people trying to put on some kind of front and act like they're so tough. I don't know, I'm a very, you know, as I think anyone who's seen any of my films or has talked to me for, like, 5 minutes knows, I'm a very sensitive guy, and I'm all about vulnerability, so when people try to act all tough and quote-unquote strong, and, you know, and especially when they try to, like, you know, despise bullies, which should be, it's a very simplistic statement, and I think everyone should despise bullies, but at the same time, there are so many bullies out there who probably just aren't aware that they're bullies. So anyway, but the title just comes from, because I think when guys try to act like they're so cool and they're so tough and that they're so quote-unquote bad, I mean, I think they're basically acting like petulant children. I think it's ridiculous, so I don't know, and I just like the sound of it, too. Bad, bad men. Bunch of idiots who like to think of their bad, bad men. So, yeah. There you go.
Now, I mean, with your title, you think maybe this is an action movie, but I always find your films just seem like sitcoms, like long comedies, like television pilots. I do see this one again, being a television pilot. Do you look for that when you write a film?
That's interesting. I mean, maybe that's by virtue of the fact that, like, all my films are very, very character-driven. And they're all about the characters, like, you know, conflicts with themselves and their inner dynamics. So I think that's a good thing that you can picture these characters, like, you know, going on from there and continuing their relationships and their journeys, you know, as is the case with life. So, you know, no one's journey is ever fully done. So I never think about that conscientiously. I just think in terms of, like, oh, you know, it's all about the characters and where they are at the beginning, where they are at the end, and where they are in relation to each other. So, yeah, I like the idea of, like, each of them continuing on, like, either, like, with a TV series or a sequel or whatever. It doesn't mean I'm going to do that, because for me, for the most part, I would say that the stories that I tell with each set of my characters is the story that I want to tell with those characters, and then I'm ready to move on to the next. But anyway, I guess that's good. Leave them wanting more, I suppose.
Well, that's my thing. You've said you've never done a sequel or done a television pilot. I mean, you are an actor. You live in Hollywood. Shouldn't this be the next step?
Right. I don't know. I mean, I guess it depends on who you ask. I guess for me, I love television, and I've certainly thought about at least a little bit creating, like, I'd love to be a part of, you know, certain television shows, whether it's an actor or writer, director, what have you. But when it comes to, like, my own projects, that basically by my own projects, just being the projects that start with me, that start with my ideas, I have just haven't really, I don't know, I guess I've always thought in terms of feature films, and then also plays. I love to do plays as well. So I think in that kind of like that hour to 20 minutes, to 2 hour, you know, stretch of time for each set of characters. So I don't know, maybe that's something, you know, I'm always considering, like right now too, I'm playing, you know, early stages of writing a book, and I'm considering, like, you know, other mediums as well as I continue to make movies, and I'm writing a new play right now too. So anyway, maybe a TV show is next. Who knows?
How many plays have you written?
Plays I've only done, this will be my, right now, yeah, this will be my fourth.
So have these been produced?
Yeah, we've self-produced, we've staged all of them out here. And then, like, We Got Lucky was originally, that was a play, and then we made the movie right after. And that was kind of the whole idea behind that, was to stage it as a play, to rehearse it, stage it as a play, and then shoot the movie. So we did that, and that's what I'm going to do with the next one, too. It's called Breaker Breaker. I want to do it as a play first, and then we're going to shoot the movie, like, pretty much immediately after.
So, being an indie filmmaker, you've done a lot of films. Do you have equity with people that they'll give you money for films, or do you find you're scraping for the new one every time?
At this point, for the most part, I would say I'm scraping it together every time. And, of course, you know, we're hoping, like, each time, like, you know, it'd be great to... Because obviously, you know, we need to get more and more outside financing, that's for sure, especially for certain scripts that we just can't afford to self-finance. I mean, fortunately, a lot of my stuff, you know, we have been able to self-finance. We don't need crazy budgets for it. But at the same time, like, yeah, it'd be great to, you know, not have to pay off, like, a ton of credit cards each time. But we'll always, you know, do what we have to do and just be as resourceful as possible. But we're certainly hoping to get more equity so that more folks would invest in our work.
Okay, well, go to your film now, because I'm sure that's why you're here to talk to me. Why did you decide on this? You have a very big cast for this one, a lot bigger than We Got Lucky, and I'm sorry, I forgot the second film we did. But this cast is big.
It's okay, being awesome.
Yes, that's it.
I guess, the whole genesis of this project was, yeah, like I said, like, I've always just kind of, like, found machismo to be hilarious, and I kind of want to explore, like, you know, Wickley just kind of, like, out of the blue antagonizes a guy who usually doesn't stick up for himself, and a guy who finally gets fed up and does stick up for himself, and just the ridiculous ramifications that can come from that, but ultimately, of course, championing a movie about championing, like, you know, learning that you shouldn't try to be some tough guy, something that you're not, basically. So anyway, with this cast, I don't know, I guess I didn't really think in terms of the size of it. I just knew, so basically that was the seed of the idea, and then I knew I wanted to write one that I was going to co-direct with my old friend Brad Ellis. And I wrote one with certain actors in mind, too. So basically I just knew a lot of the players that I wanted involved, and then the story just kind of came from there, from that seed of an idea and the team, the core team that I wanted to work with. So, but yeah, the cast is definitely a little bigger on this one, and everyone was a blast to work with.
Did you have problems organizing everybody? I mean, being an indie production, who knows how much money they're making on In or Out? I mean, you have to organize, like, 7 people out as opposed to just a one location. You move a lot of locations in this one.
Sure. We Got Lucky was one location. But then Being Awesome, we had a lot of locations on that as well. I mean, I think at the end of the day, like, even being, I mean, there's so much that I cut out of Being Awesome. I probably cut about, I think I cut from the initial, like, 47 minutes out of Being Awesome. So there's a lot of location stuff that people didn't even wind up seeing. But anyway, with that man, yeah, of course, like, you know, the more locations, the more actors you have in play, like, the tougher it is to schedule. But yeah, I mean, it definitely, I guess I didn't really, because every production is a major challenge, so... I mean, when you remove, like, you know, various locations, that certainly helps to some extent. But at the same time, you still find yourself, you know, joyfully scrambling every day to make it happen. And especially with a tight schedule, I mean, we shot Bad Man in 16 days, which is very tight for that amount of actors in that amount of locations. So well,
let's discuss some of your locations that you brought up. We have an office location, we have a bar location with other buildings, which could be the same building, and we have a coffee shop. But they're probably big ones. Did you have any problems getting those, or they're all easy as normal?
Well, okay, so we shot that movie in Memphis, and I'm from Memphis originally, and then my directing partner on that one, Brad, still lives in Memphis, and some of the cast members, like Drew Smith, live in Memphis, quite a few, like the DP on that one, Ryan O'Parker. Anyway, so it's a great filmmaking community in Memphis, and we've been fortunate, because we've shot there, like, off and on, like, you know, since we were kids, basically, since we were in high school. So, and we know a lot of people in that town. So it was, it's a lot easier for us to get access to locations from very gracious people in Memphis than it is in Los Angeles or elsewhere. We've definitely gotten some great locations in Los Angeles as well. It's just the doors open a little more readily. There's a little less red tape, we found in Memphis. Like the coffee shop, Brad's friend Jared owns that place, and they actually had just opened before we started shooting. So that was Avenue Coffee. So that was a great find. Honestly, the office—I don't even remember how we came about. I think I just started emailing various people in town with office buildings, and then what was the other one?
Well,
the bar. Yeah, Brad knows the guy who ran. He grew up with the son of the guy who ran that bar. So yeah.
And I don't want to leave out the gun shop, because that was the most interesting location for me.
Yeah, the gun shop was great. We found that through our DIT on the movie, Jacob Roya. he knows the guy who ran, or I guess still runs that gun shop. So he got us connected with him. So yeah, that was an interesting one too, because I've never even held a gun. I am by no means a gun aficionado at all. We're just kind of part of where that scene came from. I like the idea of a guy who you're running a gun shop and just the kind of nonsense that could ensue from there. So, but we were very grateful to them for letting us shoot there. But yeah, I still, even after shooting there, I've still never touched a gun, and I probably never will. So.
Well, I'm one ahead of you. I've touched a gun.
Okay.
Never shot one, but I've touched one. did you want to write your main character as the most awkward person ever? I mean, who orders coffee that badly?
Yeah, I kind of did one. Like, that was part of the fun of that role, was to write someone who's just, extremely awkward. I like the idea of a guy who just was so uncomfortable in his own skin at the outset of the movie. And then just kind of like gradually watching him finding his footing a little bit. But no, I definitely wanted Josh to be a guy who, he could barely order coffee. It was fun to watch him kind of, you know, to play that part. And it was interesting too, like playing that part, because it does, I'm not necessarily, you know, I mean, obviously, like, when I'm acting and directing, I'm not, like, fully in character the entire shoot, because I have to talk to the actors, and I have to, like, you know, snap out of it and do some producing and stuff as well, too. But it is kind of like, when you're in that mindset, though, especially in certain scenes, like, it kind of, like, has a residual effect for me, at least, where, so it would make me feel a little awkward, too, like, between certain takes. I don't know. I was pretty deep into the awkwardness of that character.
Oh, absolutely.
Which, it was fun. Ultimately, it was fun to play.
The only character I really could relate to was the other guy that works at the office that didn't hang out with the guys. Because I don't think I could spend
Gary?
5 minutes with these people. I think they would drive me nuts.
Wait, you're talking about Gary?
Gary, yes.
The guy that we all, that Josh and Royce despise, but Steven has a soft spot for?
Yes.
Yeah, well, Gary's kind of meant to be that guy, and, you know, I won't say too much, I don't want to give away too much, but Gary's kind of meant to be that guy who, I mean, for me, like, yeah, he's a bit quote-unquote much, but, you know, the way he is presented, like, it is kind of silly how much Royce and Josh despise this guy, because he's clearly, like, you know, he's a kind-hearted guy, seems to be the case, at least. And that's what Steven perceives as well. But he just kind of like, you know, I guess with Josh and Royce too, they're both pretty insecure and feel like they're not doing so great at their job or in any aspect of their lives. So to have someone like Gary, who's, you know, kind of a bit of a, not a showboat, but someone who's doing pretty well at work, really kind of ticks them off. So
I wouldn't want to leave.
But that's funny. That was the one guy you couldn't relate to. I mean, that's fair enough.
I told you, I do not like her character in this one. I'm just like, not for me. I would not hang out with this guy. He drives me nuts.
Gary?
Gary's fine. I can deal with Gary. I get how.
Oh, you're talking about me?
You. So awkward. I'm like, I would have to walk away. Go, I'm done. Too weird.
That's good. You know, I'm glad you have, I mean, I kind of like that he had that effect on you because, yeah, he's a very awkward guy.
I couldn't handle it. I'm like, I see all your films. I'm like, he's really into this one just to bug the viewer. To show I'm not the guy from the other two films. I'm the new guy. I'm like, go away. Enough. No sequel for this one, please.
That's pretty funny.
The Baller's license plate, where'd you find it? Or did you just slap it on?
Oh, no, we slapped it on. We ordered it from some, you know, whatever. I can't remember what we ordered it through, but some, you know, one of those outfits that'll print you up a fake version of anything. So, yeah, Baller One.
Yes.
Yeah, whatever it was, $20 or $30 for that bad boy.
And high-quality clown masks. Where did those come from?
Yes. Oh, man, the high-quality clown masks. Well, we've searched high and low, like, on Amazon and various other sites for a variety of clown masks. And, you know, we didn't have the biggest budget in the world. But ultimately, so we're trying to find something reasonable. And what we wound up finding when they arrived were so much more, how should we say, low quality than we expected. And, you know, they came at a really good price, too, so I'm not knocking them at all. But basically, so I wound up adding the line, or adding that part of the line, high quality, into that line. Where'd you get those clown masks? Now it's, where'd you get those high-quality clown masks? Because they clearly are not high-quality.
Well, I had to make
But they're
those.
Fun.
They are fun. Now, when you order food in a movie, do you actually eat the food? Is that like your catering budget? Okay, guys, we're going to eat here. Let's just do the scene. Then we eat the food at the Mexican restaurant?
Good question. Well, first of all, that Mexican restaurant is El Mezcal. It's in Memphis. My parents go there every week. Usually multiple times a week.
Every
they love it.
Week?
So they go every week, man. Wow. So the owner of that restaurant, because of my parents' loyalty, graciously let us shoot there before they opened one day. So, but the kitchen wasn't open. So the food, fun fact, little trivia for you, the food was actually imported from the Sonic drive-in across the street. So anyway, you eat like a little bit. At least for me, like, you know, we ate a little bit of the food while we're actually shooting, but when you have to do multiple takes in various angles, you can't eat too much. So basically my policy with food is always just eat like as much as I absolutely have to, because I know we'll be shooting that scene probably for a few hours. And, just from a budgetary perspective, we can't just keep going back and getting food. And also from an actor perspective, like, I don't want to feel too, bloated and weighed down. So you eat a little bit, you eat what you have to. But no, that's aside from the catering. Yes, that's an addition to. Those are props.
Now, you have an actor based on a cop. Is he based? You just
on a cop? Is that what you said?
Yes, he's based on a cop. He's not a real cop. Let's be honest. Your friend that's playing the cop in the film. Yeah. You know.
Yeah, no, Rex. He's what?
Go ahead. You're fine.
No, he's definitely not based off of any cop that I knew in real life. But yeah, he was a guy, like that character was a cop at some point, which was, you know, probably not the best call that the that police department ever made was hiring him. But yeah, I like the guy idea of this cop who just was completely unaccountable and, you know, he lost his job as he should have because he was selling drugs to cops, but he still has this fantasy of being a cop and getting back on the force, and he still tries to act in that capacity. But yeah, Rex is a really fun type of character to write for because he's such a wild card, and there are a lot of rules, especially like, you know, within the parameters of a movie like this, there are a lot of rules that just don't apply to Rex. that apply to a lot of other characters. So it's just kind of about finding like the rhythms of Rex and like the little callbacks and whatnot that'll make him, you put him in there just the right amount of times is the goal. Anyway, Rex was a lot of fun to write for and to watch Gabe play him. And then, yeah, throughout the whole process and post and everything. Yeah.
Well, he's still not the character I want to play, but we're going to get there very soon.
Okay.
I love the bowling alley. You have music again at the bowling alley. I love the lighting in the bowling alley.
Oh, thanks.
So,
yeah, that was, I mean, that was, go ahead.
No, I just wanted to know, why did you decide to do those lights?
Oh, we just, Brad and I just thought that was, you know, just had a really cool, we kind of like, with that bowling alley, we wanted to create kind of, I don't know, we were trying to replicate, what is it, like the black lights bowling alley, like when, you know, around like 11 p.m. or 10 p.m., a lot of these bowling alleys become like black light bowling alleys with cool little like lighting effects and whatnot. So we're kind of trying to replicate that feeling. And we just like the idea of the broken down guy. We like the idea of Clive and Owen going to this bowling alley and having to deal with, you know, getting linked up to the bookie. We like the ideas of these characters, or like these quote unquote like cool guys and whatnot who operate in these kind of, environments that, I don't know, are a little bit ridiculous in one way or another. Not ridiculous, but that are more innocent and playful. Like a bowling alley like that at night. You have these seedy characters kind of operating out of that place. I don't know. We like those kind of juxtapositions. And also, we like kind of taking the piss out of characters like that, too, and showing how, you know, at deep down, and again, that's why I think it's kind of ridiculous when guys, or really anyone, tries to act like they're so tough and badass and whatnot. Because, you know, deep down, like, you know, our inner children, like, we all have these, we're all a lot more innocent and vulnerable than some people would like to let on. So, anyway.
I want to discuss.
Yeah, so that was kind of like.
Who's the man behind the bar, and why did I get that role?
Oh, that's the snack bartender? That's what you wanted?
That's who I wanted to be.
Well, okay, the man behind, that's Marty Ray. Marty Ray is great. He's a musician and an actor. Awesome guy, a lot of fun to work with. Now, as to why you didn't get the role, if only I'd known you back then, that might have been a start. but I had to make this movie and these other movies to be able to know you. So here we are.
So I have a shot.
But Marty came out and auditioned. Now you have more of a shot, yes.
Oh, good.
Marty came out and auditioned. He did a great job. Yeah, we read quite a few people for that role. All the roles I didn't write, quite a few I wrote with certain actors in mind, but they're also, like you said, it's a big cast, so there were a lot that we had to go casting for. We read a lot of snack bartenders, and a lot of them were great, but yeah, Marty Ray was definitely the man for the job.
So I have a note here, the highway traffic shot.
Yes.
Let's discuss that one. How did that come about?
Okay, well, that came about. So we have a good relationship with the Memphis Film Commission. Lynn Sittler and Sharon O'Gwynn run the Film Commission, and they were able to basically help us out and get that road shut down for X amount of time. I don't remember how long it was, maybe 10 minutes or something, but yeah, that was pretty crazy. We tried to shoot it, obviously, as quickly as possible. We did two takes, and we timed it up pretty well before we got there because, you know, all of a sudden we got there. We knew what we'd asked for, and we knew it would have been granted. But once you're there and you realize, like, oh, crap, like, you know, we've kind of, like, shut down traffic in this stretch of road for a little while. We better wrap this up quickly so people can, like, get to where they're going. So that's how that came about, was with the help of the Film Commission and getting the police to close it off for us. So, yeah.
Okay, we're going to discuss the very end, but I'm going to have to reach around and you'll figure out where I'm going. Is this like your big ending to all those action films you like and all those Godfather films you like near the end?
Oh, you're talking about, wait, The Bookie?
Yes.
Wait, what about him though? Is that my ending to what now?
You're ode to film, all Italian mobster films and all those.
Maybe on some level. I didn't think of that consciously, but Again, I like the idea of, like, at the end of the day, like, these guys all come up against, you know, someone who is, like, in a certain regard, like, within this universe that this film takes place in, you know, someone who is a little, like, not, someone who's not to be trifled with, basically. But also, again, who still has their ridiculous quirks and who still, again, not quite as quote-unquote tough as they're letting on. But yeah, I basically wanted everything to come to a screeching halt as far as, like, okay, you got these two sides. You got Josh and his guys, and you got Jerry and his guys, and they've been, like, you know, squabbling and butting heads this whole time. Well, okay, I'm trying to be careful with what I say. Anyway, because I don't want to give too much away. But then for things to kind of, like, you know, all of a sudden the bookie comes in and puts an end to the childish games and kind of, like, lays down the law. So, yeah, maybe on some level I was pulling from some mafioso films or whatnot, or making a little homage to those. But yeah, I just thought it was a really fun scene. And that actor is amazing, Richard Spade Jr. He did an incredible job. And anyway, we had a blast with that.
Okay, there's one person we haven't mentioned.
I thought that was gonna be the role you wanted to play.
No, the bar guy, 100% for me. I'm not a good actor. I know my limitations. Let's just keep it at that.
Gotcha. Fair enough.
We've left out one person. I think she'd be upset if we didn't mention her. I think you know who I'm going to next.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Maria Wasilenko. She's awesome.
That's what we need to talk about a bit more. She's a little crazy. I liked her. I think she added a lot to the film.
I agree. That's another role that was a lot of fun to write because there's, you know, there's different sides to that character. And I kind of want, like, you know, set her up as more of a, you know, from the outset, kind of a, not damsel in distress, but she is one who gets kidnapped. And you don't quite yet, we've given little hints, but you don't quite yet know the real range of this person or what she's really like. And that's kind of revealed over the course of the night. So a lot of fun to write. So then to bring in Maria again as someone who auditioned for it, my friend Matt Stiller knew her in New York at the time. And she's a Canadian actress. Awesome. And yeah, she did. She brought, you know, as any great actor does, like, brings so much to it. And just really, like, when we saw her audition, she really just brought to life, kind of, you know, what I'd imagined. And she was just a blast. She was a very integral part of the team.
Oh, we can't leave out the music. You do use music in your film, as you always do. So let's go over the hip-hop music and some of the other choices you made.
Yeah. So that opening track, again, was kind of, you know, we like the juxtaposition of this awkward guy, Josh, like, starting his day in a very, quote-unquote, you know, his mundane routine or whatnot, or just his daily routine, and then setting that against, a hip-hop song, kind of a hard-charging hip-hop song about being a bad, bad man.
Yeah.
We like that juxtaposition. So that was a collaboration between, it was Teflon Don did the vocals, Sean Faust, our audio guy and executive producer, did the, him and Brian Wurzburg did the music and produced it. So I think Brian Wurzburg wrote the lyrics and Sean did the music. That's right. That's what it was. So anyway, yeah, love that song. And then the ending credit song was my buddy Edward Herta, who also did the ending credit song for actually all the music for We Got Lucky was Edward Herta. Yeah, he wrote the ballad Pills, the ballad of a bad, bad man for the ending credits. And then in between, like, our score, we had a few friends. Adam Woodard led the charge in Memphis on doing a great score. We're looking for kind of like a you know, kind of a funkier score for this one. So that was a lot of fun. It's a very different score from any of our other films. So that was a lot of fun to work with those guys on that and to see what they brought to the table, which was a lot. So yeah, I love music and I love, you know, figuring out the best way to utilize it in any given film. But yeah, it's definitely, I mean, that's something breaker that I'm writing about deals a lot with music and the songwriting process. So I'm learning a lot more about that right now too. So yeah.
I just want everybody to know, I have to let you go because you gave me a time crunch. So we're going to end here and finish with three questions. So don't get me in trouble. I still have 1 minute. Okay.
Sure. And I appreciate that.
I did listen to you. One thing you've learned about being a dad.
Oh, one thing I've learned about being a dad. Oh, wow. Jeez. I mean, for me, it's the greatest thing in the world. I learned, you know, you're always learning to adapt and be on your toes. And I don't know, it's just pretty awe-inspiring every day, even the tougher parts. So, yeah, one thing I learned about that is I want more kids. I want to keep going.
What is your favorite cup of coffee to order?
Ooh. it depends on the day, but I got to say, especially this time of year, I am I'm a pumpkin spice latte kind of person. So I don't know if that's my favorite, but right now I'm into the fall weather. Not that we really get that too much in California, but the fall is my favorite season. So I love that pumpkin spice. There you go.
Because your wife, I know, listens to every interview we do. What is her favorite movie?
What is her favorite movie?
Yes.
I would say hers is a toss-up. Harold and Maude is up there. If I had to say one, I would probably, for her, I'd probably say Harold and Maude. She also loves the movie Storks and Saving Silverman. And quite a few others, but I would say probably her number one is Harold and Maude.
I've seen them all, so I'm good. Tell everybody where they're going to find your movie. Amazon Prime, I presume, as usual.
Yeah, you can find Bad Bad Man on Amazon Prime. You can find it on iTunes, YouTube, Google Play. Yeah, those are the spots.
Well, thank you for your time. Have a great day. Enjoy.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ben. Okay. As always. I'll talk to you soon.
Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page? Thank you.